Chapter 7. A Night Aboard the McCrag's Honour. Yasili Suleimania was permitted to see the Primarch before they reached Parmenio. She doubted she would have seen him at all if she'd been forced to wait for the drop out of warp. Her ship was ready to depart the fleet as soon as they were free of the Empyrean. It would not survive the war Gilliman was rushing towards. Gilliman called for her while she was sleeping. It was late in the sixth watch, a time designated loosely as night. She rose immediately from sleep, rinsed out her mouth with tepid, metallic ship's water, and picked up the slender stasis box she had for the Primarch. Meetings with Gilliman were precious, and she left the room before she had her uniform on properly. She jogged down the corridor, doing up her buttons. Time dribbled away from her slowly but unstoppably. The fear of wasting a second of her audience with the Primarch nibbled at her composure. The McCrag's Honour grumbled over ripples in the warp. It shook, twice, very gently, the twitch of an animal shaking off a flea. The voyage was the calmest Suleimania had experienced in some time. She joined Rabute Gilliman in an out-of-the-way transit conduit. He was a blue shadow in the gloom, more apparent by the noise he made than by sight. He paced with a machine's patience, heading towards the distant prow. In his armour, he looked like a robot warrior of the Cybernetica legions. He matched their height and their heft. If his head were hidden with their metallic dome, he could have been a machine. But his face was uncovered, a human component nested in ceramite. A proud face. A fierce face. He was a giant, a mechanical marvel, a post-human demigod. Gilliman was human in spite of everything about him that was not. She instinctively knew that they were kin. Care for his fellow man had scribed the lines into his face. Upon his shoulders rested the fates of them all. That is why she did not fear him. For all the whine and purr of his battle plate and the clank of his boots on the metal decking, and despite her soft-footed approach, the Primarch heard her coming. He could not simply look over the massive shoulders of his warsuit, so he shouted out directly forward, loudly enough that she would hear.
Yasili Suleimania, how goes the search for the truth?
She ran to catch him. He did not slow his stride, which, though seeming ponderous from behind, was swift. As she spoke, she had to jog to keep up.
Slowly, my lord, she said.
She clutched the stasis box to her chest.
I finally finished collating all the information my agents gathered during our last expedition. I apologize it took so long, but my lateness is a sign of our success.
I look forward to seeing what you have.
It was a good haul, my lord. I will have the materials transferred to your private library as soon as first watch is called. I have the catalogue here for you.
She pulled out a compact data slate from its leather case at her belt and held it out for him. He took it without reading it.
I'm sorry for the nature of this venue, he said,
gesturing at the tight confines of the conduit.
I must make full use of all my time. I find the walk to the prow focuses my thoughts, and I like to arrive at places without fanfare sometimes.
I would say it keeps the crew engaged with their work.
There is that, he said.
His orator's voice imbued the simplest statement with the force of a passionate declamation, though he spoke measuredly and without drama.
Mostly it is for my own sanity. Too many trumpets, too many men in uncomfortable uniforms saluting like their life depended on it. The people need their rituals, but I do not need priests screeching out my titles every time I open a door. Frankly, it is an annoyance.
She didn't really know what to say to that.
You will be ready to depart when we break warp, I assume?
My crew are prepared. We're ready, she said proudly.
I want to ask if you understand the gravity of what I'm asking you to do, he said,
still pacing, still facing forward.
You are too intelligent not to know.
It's a risk, a big risk. But my house earned its charter by taking risks and made its fortune by taking more. I don't want to let my ancestors down by shying away from a challenge, do I? Running Nachman sounds like fun, in a borderline suicidal kind of way.
Fun is a form of justification for action that never worked for me.
He smiled as he said it.
But your enthusiasm pleases me, even if it does not entirely mask your trepidation.
You said I'm intelligent. I like to think so too, but I'd be a medically certifiable idiot if I wasn't a bit scared. She clutched the stasis box closer to her. It had taken many lives and much effort to get it to the Primarch. She had to wait for the perfect moment to hand it over, otherwise it would not seem right. She looked up at his face, trying to read his statue's expression. But in case you're feeling worried about me, or even a little bit guilty about sending me to my certain death, it's an honour.
I have killed many people with honour in the past, he said solemnly.
I'll be fine, she said. I'm enjoying this journey. It is incredibly smooth. Every trip I make, my ship bounces around like a bug in a sample jar.
Nachmund will readjust your parameters for smooth.
Gilliman smiled grimly.
Travelling the warp was even easier than this in the days the Emperor walked the stars with us, he said. Then the warp seemed a calm pond to the raging sea it is in this benighted age.
Rabute, said Yasili suddenly. He glanced sidelong at her use of his given name. The liberty had been taken only once before, and recently, and though he had not rebuked her for speaking this way, it took him by surprise, she could tell. What? She said, mischief lifting the corners of her mouth. It is your name, isn't it?
It is, he agreed,
his voice no less stentorian.
Although I'd half come to believe my name is my lord, or the Imperial Regent, or Blessed Primarch, a term I find particularly irksome.
Do you find my use of your first name impertinent?
Absolutely, he said, wryly.
A little of the demigod's tone slipped from his voice. A little warmth took its place. Yasili was hardly abashed. Then I apologise, my Lord Gilliman. Gilliman stopped his walking and looked down at the woman.
I said it was impertinent. I did not say I disapproved, Yasili.
His voice softened further, becoming yet more human. And his heroic expression did not change exactly, but he somehow became more relatable.
I find your familiarity refreshing. It is good to be reminded that I am a person as well as a Primarch, and I do have a sense of humour, despite what you might have heard.
I haven't heard anything about that, my lord, he laughed.
Don't lie to me, she shrugged.
I try not to.
You really have no fear of me, do you? He asked. I find that amazing, as well as saddening. Everyone is frightened of me now.
She flashed her brilliant smile at him. I suppose I should be frightened of you, but no, I'm not. There's plenty to be afraid of in this galaxy. Why be afraid of the one who is trying to save us? He loomed over her, his eyebrows drawn together, two disapproving thunderheads shadowing his eyes.
I am Rabute Gilliman, Primarch, gene-engineered son of the Emperor of Mankind. I am the Avenging Son, the Victorious, the Blade of Unity, the Master of Ultramar. I am the Imperial Regent. Empires tremble before me. I was made 100 centuries before your birth, millennia before your house rose to prominence. I have fought demons and defied beings that call themselves gods. Species have died at my hand. Now tell me again, do you not fear me?
She stared up at him. Her smile was a little less cocky, but she was still wearing it, proud as a badge. When you put it like that, maybe I do, a little bit. Gilliman returned her smile tenfold. Some faces are transformed by smiles. Gilliman's was not one of those faces. Warm though his expression was, he retained the look of an image carved from marble to grace a cenotaph.
"More impudence," he said,
though his tone was kind. He resumed his walking.
"You may call me Rabute, if you wish. I miss such signs of common feeling."
"I thank you, Robu," she said.
"Now you overstep the limit," he said.
"I am sorry, my lord."
"Somehow, I doubt your sincerity," he said, still smiling. "I assume you have business you wish to discuss, and have not come simply to test the limits of my indulgence?"
"Yes. Yes, I have. About Nachmund, I'll need everything there is to know about the passage through the gap. I've already approached your navigators, but you know how close-mouthed they are. They won't speak with mine. Likewise, your astrogators. In fact, pretty much everyone won't tell me anything."
"Nachmund is of particular sensitivity," Gilliman said. "You have my seal. It will open any door. If it does not, send the denier to me, and we shall see whose orders are obeyed."
"I do have it," she said. "I don't like to flash it around the fleet when you're a few kilometres away from whoever I'm flashing it at. It seems tactless, like I'm showing off."
"I understand. That is diplomatic. Every time we speak, my choice of you for the Logos is validated again."
"Are you praising me or yourself?" she said. He gave her an amused look.
"I shall have the necessary information released. The message I wish you to convey to the Warden of Imperium Nihilus is ready. It will be sent to your ship an hour before you depart."
"That's very precise."
"Precision is what I was made for. The contents of the message are to remain secret. Although they are encrypted and sealed within an annihilation cask, there are always ways that secrets can be let free."
"An annihilation cask?" She was shocked by that. "I better make it through then," she said.
"You will thank me for a clean death if your ship is overtaken," he said.
She couldn't argue with that.
"And now to the matter I desire to speak of. Tell me about Matthew. You went to see him, as I asked."
"In a way," she said, carefully.
"Please define in a way, Yasili. You haven't antagonized him, I hope?"
"Maybe," she said. "He's got this little hidey-hole down in the bowels of the ship."
"I know of it. In the Mortuus ad Monumentum," said Gilliman.
"Isn't that place sacred?" asked Yasili.
"Sacred is not a word I'm comfortable with. It was a memorial to the honored dead once, a long time ago."
"Don't you mind him lurking down there, though?"
"He is a man of a certain temperament. As long as I know where he is, I do not mind him having a space of his own. He is devout, a deep thinker. I would rather he had somewhere to put his mind in order than seethe under watch. I suppose he finds the monument holy. What did you think?"
"I do not think he means you any harm."
"And what is his motivation in serving me?"
"Since I rejoined you at Tucson, I've had several conversations with him. I've read what I can about him, interviewed his associates. I believe his only motivation in serving you is to serve the Emperor and the Imperium. Some of the things he said make me think he wants to convert you, but he means no more harm than that." Gilliman nodded.
"They all want to convert me, these priests. In that, there is a risk. If I am too dismissive of his beliefs, there is a danger he may turn on me."
"Really?"
"It would not be the first religion to tear down its so-called saviour."
"May I ask something? Something impertinent?"
"I've already granted you permission to be impertinent, Yasili. Speak."
"Why him?" she asked. "Why not someone more pliable?"
"I need some way of reaching out to the common folk, speaking with them in a way they understand," said Gilliman. "My last militant apostolic was too much a creature of the establishment. Matthew is fresher, more honest, and he understands the suffering of ordinary men. He is not apart from them. I also know he is that way because he is more devout and fanatical. I understand the risk.
Won't people transfer their religious devotion to him rather than you, my lord?
That is what I want. I dislike being venerated. I tread a very delicate path. I cannot deny the Emperor's divinity. It is too far embedded into the rotting edifice the Imperium has become. To deny it would provoke war. Individuals with your views are few and far between.
Mostly because we are burned alive, she said, as indeed was due to be her fate until Gilliman's agents had saved her.
I am unfortunately aware of that, he said.
You could just play along.
In a sense, I do. But to openly embrace worship would make me a hypocrite.
There are worse crimes than hypocrisy, my lord, said Yasili.
There are. But to assume control of the church as its figurehead would have the same extreme consequences as denial. Factionalization followed by religious war. I understand there have been plenty of those during my absence. At the very least, I would become enchained by their organization.
He stopped suddenly, catching Yasili by surprise.
I will never be beholden to anyone, human or otherwise, he said firmly. I have been imprisoned by too many beings and used by more. I must be free to forge my own path, or humanity is doomed. The strategy I use with the Ecclesiarchy is a bitter cup containing many unpalatable things, but it must be supped from, for the alternatives are worse. I have to be free.
You're going to say you'd rather die?
Second-guessing me is another impertinence, Yasili. But yes, I rather would die. I cannot allow myself to be subordinate to anything except the survival of the human race, not even an idea, and certainly not a belief. If I were to become dominated by one faction or another, then I would serve their ends and not those of humanity. My mission must be pure as the Great Crusade.
Can it be done? He gave her a harder smile.
I will tell you something. This armour.
He spread his hand across his chest. Tongues of pale flame shone on his fingers where the scrollwork caught the ship's lumens.
I was told it kept me alive. I was warned by the Eldari who aided Archmagor's call in awakening me never to take it off.
I've seen you without it, she said. She shrugged. I don't see the Eldari as naturally deceitful like most do, but a lie for them is not the same as a lie for us. It pays to be careful with the Eldar.
It does. I am. Ivrain was not lying. She believed what she said to be true. The Eldari never do anything that does not aid their race directly. They did not resurrect me for the sake of humanity, but for their own species. They see me as another piece in their game against extinction. I cannot be their pawn, just as I cannot become the weapon of the Imperial cult. She told me what she did because she wants me alive.
You took it off anyway, Suleimania said. She thought a moment. You took it off to defy them.
I never have only one reason for doing anything, he said to her. Defying Ivrain was part of it. I do not like to be told what is and is not possible. But the driving reason was that I cannot be in thrall to the Eldari. If I allowed myself to be dependent on it, what happens if the armor malfunctioned, or they turned it off? Call built it, but I doubt he understands the fullness of its workings. So much was dictated to him. To avoid alerting them, I conducted the research on the armor of fate myself. Do not think there are none of the Eldari's agents abroad in this fleet, he said, forestalling Suleimania's next question. I do not have the technical skills of some of my dead brothers. The armor is complex, but I was able to determine the majority of its processes and what exactly it was doing to keep me alive. It is esoteric, warp tech. The Eldari make no difference between the material universe and the immaterium, not in the same way we do. I also determined that if I took it off, I might survive, theoretically. I waited for a moment of peace, that being relative. I told no one what I was about to do. I took with me 7 armory servitors, nothing, and nobody is sentient. Removing the armor was painful and difficult, especially as I did not wish to damage it, for it is an exemplary piece of war gear. Furthermore, although my convictions were firm, I wished to leave the option to myself of replacing it should I begin to perish. When the armor of fate was removed, I felt justified in my actions, and when the pain came, my belief that I was doing the right thing did not leave me. Not when the strength left my body, and the wound my brother inflicted upon me at Thessala opened itself and wept blood, scented with immortal poison. I fell, my body aflame with agony. My mind was ablaze, but I held one thought. I cannot die. Not that it is impossible, but that I would not allow it. When Fulgrim beat me in combat, I had the same thought. I feared no one would be able to hold the Imperium together were I to die. That fear has been borne out 1,000,000 times. The stakes are so much higher now than they were in the past. Maybe this gave me strength. He touched his hand to the breastplate. Into realms of thought and terror I passed, and experienced many things there that I can barely recall. But I awoke. I earned my scar.
He ran an armoured finger across his neck, where the ropey mark of Fulgrim's wound peeped out from his soft seal collar.
I was weak, but the worst had passed. I put the armour back on and went about my duties. That week, I had it removed every night, and each time it became more bearable, until I could go abroad without it in tolerable condition.
You are in pain when you do not wear it.
Some. Not as much as I was. It is important I am seen without it. The Imperial Regent should show no weakness, nor any reliance on a Xenos race.
Humanity fled him as he said those words, spoken with an intensity a mortal man could not match.
It could be that my body had recovered enough that it could finish the job of healing itself, said Gilliman, and that the venom in my veins was but a residue it could overcome. Whether or not those things are true, I will tell you one that is. I will not let myself die. The Imperium needs me whole and free of the influence of others.
Then you have nothing to fear from Matthew, she said.
Maybe that is true, for now. I do, however, fear the Church.
In these times, Lord, I would take whatever help I can get, said Yasili. He shook his head and began to walk again.
I think back to Nicaea so long ago. There was dissension among my brother Primarchs about the wisdom of using warp-born powers within our legions. The Emperor decreed that we abandon the practice. We broke that ban when warpcraft proved to be one of the most effective weapons against the forces of Chaos. Perhaps admitting faith into my armory is no more extreme than entertaining witchcraft as a weapon of war.
He paused.
Sometimes I do not know what to think. I can see the strategic value, in fact, the necessity of the Imperial cult. But I do not understand it. I do not think I ever will. Of all my brothers, only Lorgar had a genuine sense of the spiritual. He had faith in my father once, much like Matthew does. He was censured for that belief, and now a version of his religion is an indispensable part of the apparatus of state. The irony of that is so black I can only laugh at it. It was Lorgar who fell first, not Horus. Did you know that?
The Horus heresy was a long time ago, my lord. It is a legend to most. Even I, privileged enough to read the materials I collect for your histories, know next to nothing about it.
it is not accurately remembered. You know that Lorgar was the root of the Imperial cult.
Yes, she said. A thread of misgiving wound itself around her guts and pulled tight. I didn't before Talsimar. Did he know what she had in her possession?
You know also that should this information become widespread, it would cause untold upheaval.
Yes, she said. Her hand tightened on the stasis box. How peculiar he should bring this up now. She did feel a little afraid of him right then.
I shall tell you something none now know. The Emperor ordered that Lorgar, who was called Aurelian, desist in his worship of him. He did not. So my father had me teach him a lesson. Lorgar had raised a city in praise of the Emperor. They called it the Perfect City. My legion destroyed it. I took no pleasure in the act, though I suspect the roots of corruption were planted long before the Emperor took Lorgar to his side. It was my legion's humbling of Aurelian that helped push him into the embrace of chaos.
Suleimania's eyes widened in shock. You blame yourself for the war? You couldn't have known what would happen.
It was my job to know, he said. I was made to plan. Each of my brothers was given a set of talents, derived from the Emperor himself. Individually, our talents overlapped. Redundancy, I suppose, should be incorporated into any system. Lord Rogal Dorn and I, for example, both inherited his capacity for strategy and contingency planning. But in combination, our talents were unique. Dorn was a greater builder than I ever was, and I a far better administrator. Neither of us saw this coming, nor did Sanguinius, who had powers of foresight second only to the Emperor himself. Of us all, I think perhaps only poor Conrad knew, for he too had the power to see the future.
The Night Haunter, Suleimania whispered.
Gilliman nodded.
Was he as gifted as they say the great angel was?
He was, said Gilliman. He was also insane. Maybe, if he had not been, this all could have been avoided, assuming, of course, the Emperor hadn't intended this to happen all along.
Do you really think that? Gilliman sighed. He seemed tired.
Yes, Ili. Do you think you can truly comprehend the workings of my mind?
No, she said. Of course not. It's impossible. I've got a pretty high opinion of myself, but you are far more than human.
Then you can understand by extrapolation. I merely suppose, for I am as able to understand the Emperor's mind as you are able to understand mine.
She pulled a face.
Has something I said given you cause to worry? He asked.
It's funny, and I don't mean in an amusing way, that you bring up your brother Lorgar with me today. Gilliman raised an eyebrow.
How so?
Can you read minds? She asked frankly. I don't think you can, but you are... Well, you are what you are.
Gilliman might have laughed again, were it not for her deadly serious air.
The Emperor did not invest me with any appreciable psychic ability.
Now she was nervous. Quickly, she unhooked the stasis box from her belt and held it up to him, before she could change her mind.
I brought you this. Once I knew what it was, I was pretty anxious to keep it hidden away from the others. Only I and Scorpani have seen it. Danton did too, but he's dead.
You do not trust your colleagues.
I don't trust anyone, she said quietly. Apart from myself... And you.
She held up the stasis box.
It's in here. I thought you might want to see this immediately, and I thought it had better be me that gave it to you. I'd be careful with it. It's very fragile. I suppose it would be, being 10,000 years old or so.
He looked at the box.
Do you believe in coincidences? She asked. reaching up to key the cipher into the lock pad on the side.
"Once I did not, but given sufficient evidence now, I will entertain any idea."
The box lid folded into itself. Soft blue stasis light lit Gilliman's face. The device hummed with the effort of holding time at bay. It was a hollow noise with a silent centre. The eerie hush of changelessness rose from the middle of the containment field. There can be no noise where time does not flow. Gilliman looked into the box. His eyes went hard.
"Where did you get this?" he asked softly.
"Talsimar," she said quietly. She looked at the book inside. She hated it.
"Your report said you were opposed," he said. "The Inquisition?"
Regret at the deaths incurred as the price of retrieval clouded Yasili's eyes.
"I do not want the Logos Historica Verita to war with the Inquisition," he said.
"Whether that happens or not is out of your hands," she said, barely louder than a whisper. "Our mission is to reveal. Theirs is to obscure. We are opposed in our natures. Conflict between us is inevitable." She paused before she spoke again, not wanting to add to the concerns of this weary being. "So much talent wasted. We are all supposed to be on the same side." She searched his eyes. "I hope you think it was worth it." Gilliman looked at the item inside for a long moment before closing the box.
"I learned long ago that governance, as much as war, is a balance sheet whose figures are scribed in blood," he said.